The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, hi there. Welcome to another brand spanking new edition of Rico Bronya. Today's edition is, I think for you, it's a mailbag edition. I figure I'm going to try to do this once a week where we have an entire episode just dedicated to you, the loyal Rico listener, the loyal Rico subscriber, and the very loyal Rico emailer. So we will touch on a variety of Met subjects that you dictate, because we do get a lot of emails throughout the season. It's very tough throughout the regular season to read all of them. So throughout this offseason, we will do our best to really interact with you. So this is a mailbag edition of Rico Bronya, but we got a lot of fresh editions of the Rico to look forward to coming up tomorrow. Or today, depending on when you downloaded this podcast, we will do an extensive starting pitching free agency preview. I believe that is the first free agency preview in depth we should do, because the starting pitching market is probably going to move faster than, let's say, the position player market. So we will do a starting pitching preview. We will hand out our Met Awards next week once the MLB Awards are starting to hand out. We heard about the finalists over the last couple of days. Mets had a few finalists, Francisco Lindor, a finalist for the MVP, no surprise there. And Carlos Mendoza, a finalist for Manager of the Year. We will hand out our Rico Bronya Awards next week as well. We'll do an extensive free agency preview on bullpen arms, on position players, and obviously, as news breaks, we will react to it. Today, though, we talk to you. We have an email. It's called the RicoB at gmail.com. So we will talk to you throughout the podcast. One quick thing before we get started, and that is the latest on Juan Soto. Jeff Passan wrote an article that came out. I think it was an ESPN Insider article, so I may be giving you information that you didn't pay for. I do pay for the ESPN Insider. I question myself every time I click and log in why I'm doing it. And let me just say this about the ESPN Insider. We already pay enough money to be an insider. When we log in, you don't have to log us out every freaking time. I feel like I have to log into the ESPN Insider every single time. But either way, the market for Juan Soto, according to Jeff Passan, appears this way. There are four teams that have secured meetings with Soto in Southern California. Those four teams are as follows: the Boston Red Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays, the two New York teams, the Yankees and the Mets. He also pointed out that the Blue Jays got the first meeting. John Heyman had a report that the Blue Jays are a major, major threat for Soto, which is not a surprise considering how aggressive they were for Shohei Ohtani a year ago. I'll tell you why I remain skeptical of both Toronto and Boston. When you look at how they're set up, and if Soto is going to factor in chances of winning, obviously money, I think, is the end-all be-all. It's the number one priority. But if he is going to factor in ownership, roster construction, commitment to winning, number one, I'd be very skeptical of the Red Sox. They have not spent in numerous years. They let Mookie Betts walk away. They obviously traded him, but they decided not to extend Mookie Betts. They decided to not extend Xander Bogaerts. They did decide to extend Rafael Devers, but the Red Sox have been a relatively cheapish organization over the last few years. Accusations that the owner is more concerned about the soccer team than the Red Sox. So you wonder if Soto looks at that and says, yeah, I appreciate you guys offering me $700 million, but is that it? Are you going to stop right there? So I remain skeptical of the Red Sox. The Blue Jays, look, they've been very, very aggressive, but they got a lot of questions they have to answer too. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a free agent at the end of next year. So I'm not questioning that the Blue Jays aren't going to be a major factor. I'm more scared of the Phillies and Nationals. Now, luckily, they have not been listed as teams that have secured a meeting with Juan Soto. What does that mean? Doesn't mean anything. They may end up getting a meeting with Juan Soto. Maybe Juan Soto can sign with a team without even meeting with them. Who the heck knows? But that's the latest. Those four teams, according to Jeff Passan, have secured the meetings, the Mets being one of them. Francisco Lindor has been very hands-on in trying to recruit Juan Soto. Great. I mean, you've got to use everything in your disposal to try to get the guy. But clearly, the number one thing is going to be how far is this owner willing to go in terms of offering Soto an unprecedented contract. All right, let's get to your emails, therico@gmail.com. I want to start off with an idea that came from numerous people. I will read the email that Lewis sent, but Jean-Pierre also had the same idea around Roky Sasaki. Lewis writes, love the podcast. Regarding Sasaki, initially he needs to be signed using the international pool money. But once he's in the building, can't the team rip the deal up and sign him to a new contract, buying out those years of control a la Jackson Chourio, who signed for 8 years before even debuting in the majors? If the Mets can do likewise with Sasaki, then there's no reason to wait until 2030 to sign an extension, as was stated on the Rico. If Stearns and Cohen can sign him to a long-term deal at market value once he's in the system, meaning during these initial negotiations, with a wink and a nod, after the internal contract goes into effect, can't they sign Sasaki to a monster contract, and can that give the Mets an advantage? Jean-Pierre throws out the same idea. Can you wink, wink, nod, nod? Here's your international bonus pool money, but don't worry, we're going to rip that bad boy up and sign you to a massive contract that's more worth your talent. So it's a great idea on the surface. When I read this, I did some research, made a phone call or two to Major League Baseball to find out, like, can this happen? And here's what I would direct you towards. Back in 2017, the Atlanta Braves had 13 prospects and their general manager banned for life. The prospects weren't banned for life. They were just removed from the Braves farm system. Their general manager was banned for life. And that was because they were circumventing the international signing rules between 2015 and 2017. What I would tell you is that Major League Baseball takes these rules when it comes to signing international free agents very seriously. And what I've read is that if there is any conversation, any kind of conversation about an under-the-table deal, whether it's giving said player a house or giving the agent maybe a few extra shekels that can get to the player or giving family members some kind of benefit, Major League Baseball will come down very harshly on that franchise. Very similarly to what they did to the Atlanta Braves. According to that investigation that MLB did on Atlanta about 5 years ago, Manfred said MLB's investigations determined the Braves funneled extra signing bonus money to five players by giving the funds first to another player considered a foreign professional under baseball's rules and then having money redistributed to the other five. So the Braves tried something sort of similar to this. Now, you guys are bringing up, well, just sign him to an extension. There's nothing wrong with that. Here's the problem. If you sign him to an extension anytime after initially signing him, MLB is going to investigate, naturally. They're going to investigate and they're going to find out, did you ever converse with the agent or the player telling them, don't worry, we're going to give you a big contract? And if they deem that you did, they could ban you for life. So I think those punishments against Atlanta, obviously, it's a little different what they were trying to do, but it's kind of the same. You're circumventing these rules, led to such a harsh suspension that I don't think there's a team, including the Mets, that would deem the risk worth the squeeze. So it's a creative idea. There are semantics involved because, well, okay, a year from now, sign him to an extension. How do you know you actually discussed it with him a year earlier? Look, it's tough to prove, but it's also probably too risky. If you see that Major League Baseball banned a guy for life and stripped players from an organization, 15 of them, it's just, it's not worth it, as great of a talent as Sasaki is. So, look, I think the Mets have to play by the same rules as everybody else, and they're going to have to convince him, I'm not sure how, but they're going to have to convince him, come here for the next 6 years of your career. Don't go to LA. Don't go to San Diego. Don't go elsewhere. It's a tough sell, but that's what the Mets are going to try to do. I don't think circumventing the rules by handing me an extension is going to be worth it, considering how hard they came down on the Atlanta Braves. Nick writes, would you be willing to include David Peterson in a trade for Garrett Crochet, or do you think that would potentially be a wash? Both seem to be under team control until 2027. Both lefties, but Crochet is 4 years younger. Both are lefties, but Crochet is 4 years younger. I want to think Peterson is developing into a frontline starting pitcher. So there's two avenues to this question. There's, hey, as a Met fan, are you willing to include David Peterson? And then you've got to ask the more important question, which is, does that enhance the package to Chicago? Why are the Chicago White Sox trading Garrett Crochet? They're trading Garrett Crochet because by the time he gets to free agency, I don't know if they're going to be ready to compete. And they're far away from competing right now. So their thought is, hey, if we can get a bevy of prospects for Crochet now, who has this immense value at 25 years old, that could speed up our rebuild. So if you're the Chicago White Sox, why are you trading a younger version of one pitcher for an older version of another pitcher? You know, unless you're getting the bevy of prospects that you need and that you want, it doesn't make sense on their end. So I get the question in terms of how we view David Peterson compared to Garrett Crochet. I just don't think it's realistic that that's the kind of package the Chicago White Sox are going to want. They're not going to want a guy who's under similar team control who's older. I mean, what's the point of that? And then even if you say, yeah, but you're including Peterson with other young pieces, well, what are the White Sox doing with David Peterson other than turning around and probably flipping him and trying to do the same thing they just did with Crochet? So I don't think that's a match. I don't think that's a fit. Right now, personally, I want to hold on to David Peterson. It feels like something clicked last year, whether it was just his hip being healthy or mechanical changes they've made with him. We got to see a different David Peterson. We finally got to see him develop. So right now, I would not be in love with trading him. I am a fan. I am a believer that when a guy enhances their value, you have to be more open to dealing them. Because last year, if we talked about trading David Peterson, we all would have been okay with it, because I think we had all given up on him. So there's a fine line between, hey, a guy's value's up, let's cash out, versus, yeah, the guy's value's up, but I really think they may have hit on something. And I'm certainly leaning towards they may have hit something on David Peterson. So I'm not in love with trading him in general, but I think the idea of using him in a Crochet trade doesn't really make a lot of sense. Ray Pierce came after.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
After me. He came after me hard. Would you guys like to hear Ray Pierce coming after yours truly? Well, you don't have a choice, unless you want to skip the next, you know, minute of this podcast. Ray writes, I find your recent podcast wanting in the particular as it relates to Mr. Cohen that you are as clueless as you can be in the extreme. Clueless. All right. What does Mr. Cohen love most in life? Many may say amassing wealth. That would be incorrect and pedestrian as to thought. What drives Mr. Cohen is building an organization, a task for which he has no peers. The wealth is a byproduct. He loves creating an organization and tinkering in an attempt to make it perfect. This relates to the Mets. His prime directive is to create a self-perpetuating. Oh, God. Ray, why are you using big words? I mean, come on. This is the Rico. What are you doing? Well, anyhow, he wants to create an organization with a system that can fill most roster spots from within and purchase players that are free agents, which is the best of both worlds. This is how he intends to win championships. An indicator, as we call it in the military, is his intentions. In the fact that we traded two pitchers last year with a truckload of money in order to get back high-end prospects. I realize you are very young, and a part of being young is being impulsive, where thoughts often takes a vacation. This is why insurance actuaries charge young people more for car insurance than older people. So now on your podcast, which I never miss, as it is very good. I like that. He's killing me, but loving the podcast. You said, Evan, you want to trade three prospects for a White Sox pitcher. But wait, there's more. Now it's five prospects for a White Sox pitcher and a center fielder. Try to think. Did Mr. Cohen spend tens of millions of dollars when we traded two pitchers last year to do such a thing? No. Mr. Cohen wants to build a system of prospects and add free agents. The Mets were either the oldest or one of the older teams this past season. I can see trades of some of our older players, but not our prospects. Players like Brett Beatty or Jeff McNeil can be traded, as they are not a fit on our team, but not our top prospects. I think I have been wrong before, but I think I understand this. It is not my intention to hurt your feelings or make you feel badly, as you're doing a great job and take the time to entertain and inform us. But try to think more. Look at Mr. Cohen and see how he does things and what he says he wants to achieve. Respectfully, Ray Pierce. Ray, I love the email. I don't take any offense to it. I am young and sometimes I am naive. But with all due respect, I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. A year ago, when we were doing off-season, Rico Bronyas completely agreed with you. I didn't think where the Mets were in their franchise, it made sense to trade prospects. It's why I said on the Rico and I said on WFAN that I would not have been a player to trade for Juan Soto. I said that repeatedly. I would not be a player to trade for, I'm trying to remember who else we were bantying about a year ago in terms of trades, but I was not up for it. Oh, Shane Bieber, before he got hurt. I was not into it. And a lot of why I wasn't into it is what you just laid out. The Mets are building an organization, and their approach was, let's build our farm system up. Let's do it by trading off veterans, which they did, and eating salaries, which they did, with Verlander and Scherzer, and let's buy the free agents. Let's try to win by buying the free agents and not trading prospects. And I completely agree with you, Ray, and agreed with Steve, that a year ago, that was the right approach. But now, it's a year later. And the Mets are in a different place when it comes to their organization. They're closer to winning. They're coming off the year in which they got to the National League Championship Series. They have a farm system that today is deeper than it was a year and a half ago. They feel roster-wise, they're closer. They learned a few things last year. I know there's a lot of veterans who had good years who are free agents, all true, but David Peterson emerged. Mark Vientos emerged. Things changed. And I do think, respectfully, Ray, you're wrong that Steve Cohen will approve a trade, not a ton of them, maybe not even necessarily this year if the right deal doesn't come along, but I think they are open to making prospect trades for one or two players. Now, keep this in mind, Ray, and this is where I think you're mistaken. Number one, the guy in question we're talking about is Garrett Crochet. He's 25 years old. We're not talking about trading for a 35-year-old. We're talking about a 25-year-old. That is far different. 25-year-old with team control, might I say. That is far different than talking about, hey, let's just trade a bunch of prospects for a 35-year-old. That's number one. Number two, The Dodgers. Why do I bring up the Dodgers? We've heard so much that the Mets are modeling themselves after the Dodgers. Build the farm system up, spend a ton of money on free agents to fill holes. You're telling me the Dodgers never traded young prospects for win-now players? They didn't trade for Mookie Betts. They didn't trade for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. They didn't do that. They do it, and Steve will do it, when the right trade comes along. If your argument to me, and you can certainly make it, I don't believe Garrett Crochet is the right player, that is a fine argument. He's only proven it for 1 year in his major league career. I get it. And if your argument is, I don't want to trade three or four prospects for that player, that's fine. But I think you, Ray, with all due respect, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I think you've misinterpreted Steve Cohen that they would never make a trade of young players. Of course they would, in the right deal. Is Garrett Crochet the right deal? That's the question you have to answer, or the question one can debate. But no, I disagree. I think the Mets are positioned well, and I think that it's more likelier than not that they're going to trade numerous young position player prospects for a young controllable pitcher. I think there is a very good chance that happens. Speaking of which, David Ramos writes, what do you think of this trade? Jeff McNeil plus $10 million, so you bite off some of McNeil's contract, and Brett Beatty to the Seattle Mariners for Brian Wu and JT Chargaud. The Mets can then sign Jorge Polanco for a one-year deal while Jet William develops, play him at second base because I think Acuna is going to be traded. Polanco was hurt a lot last year, but he's a solid bounce-back candidate that won't cost much. Also, imagine the Ric Flair woos every time Brian Wu strikes a player out. I'm really convinced that's the reason you want to make the trade, just so that every time Brian Wu strikes someone out, we can hear Ric Flair. So a couple of things. Let's start off with Brian Wu, because Brian Wu is one of those guys that, I mean, why wouldn't you want to add him to this team? He's under team control until 2030. He doesn't make any money whatsoever. He was making basically the league minimum last year. He's 24 years old, and the guy went out there and made 20 starts and was great last year. I have a very tough time believing that that package is nearly enough. If you're the Mariners, and we've talked a little bit about the Mariners as being a potential trade partner because they clearly can use offense, and they've got a lot of pitching. They do. So is it possible you can convince them to trade Brian Wu or Logan Gilbert, more likely Luis Castillo as the veteran above the age of 30? Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. I just don't think that trade's enough. Even eating the $10 million of Jeff McNeil and including Brett Beatty, I mean, you're talking about a 24-year-old pitcher that's under team control for as long as he is? I don't know, man. That's a tough one. Now, you mentioned JT Chargaud. That would be another good move because that's a reliever that's pitched very well the last couple of years. He pitched well last year after the Marlins traded him to Seattle. When he did pitch, he didn't pitch an awful lot, but he's been a quality reliever when he's been on the mound the last couple of years, and there's one more year of team control. So that's a nice little throw-in, that's for damn sure. But I think the trade is a little bit uneven. And I think if you're going to convince the Mariners to trade one of their controllable pitchers, especially someone as young and as solid in the early going as Brian Wu, I think it's going to cost a lot more. I really do. But good idea. Very much a good idea. Jeff Steinberg writes, happy Veterans Day. Thankfully, we have the Mets offseason to get our minds off of the horrendous New York Jets. Yeah. It helps a little bit, that's for sure. I wanted to chime in on a point you made on the podcast regarding the Mets and the need to have a six-man rotation. I completely agree with you that we cannot value pitchers the same way as if they are making 34 starts in a season. A six-man rotation would be more like 28 starts a year. That being said, I would not be in favor of bringing in two high-priced pitching arms. Pairing Corbin Burns with Kodai Senga at the top of the rotation would be a great 1-2 punch. I think I'm reading you wrong. You would not be in favor of bringing in two high-priced rotation arms, but you want to bring in Burns. Oh, I got you. So you're in favor of bringing one in, and that would be Corbin Burns. All right. So I'd have a 1-2 punch of Burns and Senga. Then to round out the rest of the rotation, which also includes David Peterson at the back end, I would trust our approach from last year and bring in guys on prove-it deals. What do you think about these options? Tier 1, Shane Bieber, Walker Buehler. Tier two, Jose Urquidy, recovering from Tommy John surgery. Jose Urquidy may not be back at all in 2025. He's one of those projects. We'll talk more about him in the next day or so when we do our in-depth free agent starting preview. Frankie Montas, Colin Ray, Trevor Williams, Anthony Desclafani, and tier three, the minor league deals, Patrick Corbin and Sixto Sanchez. Example, a rotation of Burns, Senga, Bieber, Peterson, Trevor Williams, and Colin Ray. Getting Burns, acquiring one of the tier one and two of the tier twos, and taking a flyer on both of tier threes while leveraging the pitching lab would allow the Mets to flex more of their financial muscle on signing Juan Soto and maybe Pete Alonso, and also on bullpen arms. It leaves the door open for Brandon Sproat to win a rotation spot sometime in 2025. I want to hear your thoughts and if you'd throw any of the other under-the-radar names into the mix. This doesn't factor into the equation, Severino accepting the qualifying offer, or Garrett Crochet, who I still think the Mets will go after if they'd be willing to go three or four of their top 20 prospects. So I do agree with you. I think that in this day and age, there's still a place to sign a veteran. There's still a place to sign a high-priced veteran. There's still a place to go 6 years, 180, or whatever it takes for a guy like Corbin Burns. But if I do that, and I would do that, I know there's some disagreement in the Met community about this, that would be my only long-term expenditure. Like, I don't like the idea in this day and age of kind of wrapping yourself up with multiple long-term big contracts to pitchers. So if you can get a guy like Burns or Fried or Snell, because I think those are the real tier one pitchers, and now you've got, all right, I got three guys in my rotation I feel good about. I got the legitimate ace in Corbin Burns. We'll use his name for now. I got the legit number two in Senga, which I think he is. Now, there are questions about his health because he didn't pitch this past year. But if you look at what he did in his rookie year and you have some faith that he can be healthy, I think Senga's a two or a three. Could he be an ace based on the way he pitched his rookie season? He could, but I'm not going to bank on that. So you've got your legitimate two or three in Senga. And David Peterson's sort of a wild card. He pitched like a two in the second half of last year. You could argue he pitched like an ace. And those are three guys locked into my rotation. What I would then do, and this is with a six-man rotation, is I would try to add two other guys on short-term deals. If Seve came back on a one-year deal, great. If Quintana came back on a one-year deal, great. You know, you mentioned a Walker Buehler. I love Walker Buehler on a short-term deal. I'm not sure he leaves L.A. He's a Kentucky kid to come to New York on a one-year deal, but sure, guy like that. And I would sign one other starting pitcher, or two other starting pitchers, I should say. And then I would kind of use that sixth spot with the internal options that I have. Maybe it's Jose Budo being back in the rotation. Maybe it's Tylor Megill, who I think as a sixth guy is not bad. And it obviously leaves you the possibility that one of your younger arms can kind of step up like a Brandon Sproat. So I do, in essence, agree with you. I think there's one big money spend on a pitcher, and the rest I would try to get on shorter-term deals. Concerning the Willy Adames, Pete Alonso discussion we did that on a Rico, I guess, two episodes ago. You can download it in the archives. It was the same episode of part one, listening to David Stearns. If you missed it, we discussed the potential interest in Willy Adames and the fact that, to me, it becomes a choice between Willy Adames and Pete Alonso. Lee, though, has a different spin on this. Lee writes, Evan, I think I'm all for signing Adames to be the regular third baseman and keeping Pete Alonso. Having another viable option at shortstop when Lindor misses time in ages isn't a bad thing. Having Mark Vientos and Pete Alonso alternate at first base and DH is also a good thing. Vientos can also be in the mix at third base if Adames gets hurt or needs rest. The Mets survived an entire season last year without a backup first baseman, and we're very lucky Pete was able to play 160 games. This fixes that. The Mets also have a hole at DH. Signing Adames gives us the flexibility at DH and will also make it so we don't need to gamble on a one-year flyer. So, in theory, why would I have a problem with that? Like, adding Willy Adames to be the third baseman and then treating Vientos and Alonso as a DH-ish first baseman platoon, and also keeping the options open that Adames can flip over to second base depending on the emergence of young players, and Vientos plays third and Alonso plays first base, sounds great. It's great versatility. You're not wrong about that. I find it very hard to believe that that's the way they're going to spend their money. I know there's no salary cap in Major League Baseball, and sometimes in our mind, we think Steve Cohen has unlimited funds. I think that there is a budget, as high as it may be, and I have a very tough time believing that they are going to be okay with spending that kind of money on both of those players, and that goes along with Juan Soto. And by the way, if they don't get Juan Soto, now you look at the outfield and say, okay, well, what's your outfield? Wouldn't it be better maybe to add some of the funds to that? So it's not that I wouldn't be okay with having Adames and Alonso. It's that I just don't think it's that realistic. Billy Fitz with more thoughts on the Adames discussion. Evan, I disagree 100% with your Alonso versus Adames thoughts. Yes, for his career, Pete's been a better hitter, but he's trending down. His stats are heavily skewed by his monster 19 and 2022 seasons. Numbers I don't think he'll come close to approaching as he gets into his 30s. And just by going by 2024, 112 RBIs to 88, Adames to Alonso, is a major difference. 21 stolen bases for Adames is nothing to sneeze at. Only Lindor had more on the Mets. I think Adames is a better overall player when you factor in defense, speed, athleticism, versatility, etc. I just never felt Pete was a winning player. I think Adames can do more things to help you win a game. And no offense, Evan, you're a fanboy. You love Pete more because he's a homegrown Met and want him to be a Met forever. David Stearns doesn't give two bleeps about that, and he shouldn't. He wants to win. Alonso is not a Stearns guy. He's a lumbering, slow, unathletic, one-dimensional player. He's a slugger. That's not the type of player Stearns wants. That's why I never thought Pete was coming back. And Stearns is basically telling you in his comments, he flat out said about Severino, we want him back. He's never said that about Alonso. It's just, we'll be in touch, he's a great mate, etc. Plus his comments about Vientos being comfortable playing first base, I doubt he'd be so open to that if he thought Pete was coming back. Also, I think Stearns' plan is to get a third baseman and move Vientos to first base regardless of whether they get Juan Soto or not, whether it's Adames or Bregman or someone else. So to the Met fans saying Alonso is a must if they don't get Soto, it ain't happening. And even if Pete's price drops, Stearns doesn't want him. He wrote that in caps. That's why I'm screaming. Met fans need to read the writing on the wall. Pete's a goner. In Stearns, we trust. Now, as far as your last part is concerned, I totally get how you want to parse what David said. We listened to his press conference in the last two episodes and come to the conclusion he doesn't want Pete Alonso. I'm telling you what I want. I'm giving you my opinion on how to build a team. And while Pete Alonso is this unathletic, lumbering guy, you can have a team that features different kinds of pieces. Pete just being a slugger, that's okay, especially when you need to hit home runs. Home runs are good. I know Mark Vientos hits home runs, but taking away the 35 to 40 home runs Pete Alonso can hit, yeah, I'd rather keep it. That's just me. I also think that when you talk about Pete trending down and Adames trending up, even as their lines are crossing, they had very similar years last year. You could argue that was Adames' career season, and it was one of Pete's worst, and yet the numbers are very close. So I think this whole trending in one way and trending the other way, like I get it, Pete's been trending down, but even as he trends down, he still had a more productive year or as productive year as Adames has had. I don't think it's a clear choice. When you talk about he does more things to impact winning, like I get it, he'll steal a base here and there. That's great. That's fine. You really telling me the 20 stolen bases are the difference? Defensively, was he really a Gold Glover? And we don't even know what kind of third baseman he's going to be. He was an okay defensive shortstop. What is he at third base? We don't even know. Pete, meanwhile, I think has always been underrated as a first baseman. I think he's solid. And yes, fanboy. I own that. I do admit that what a guy has done for me factors in a little bit more than a guy who's done nothing for me. Because when you give out that big contract, that $150 million or whatever it turns out to be, it's easier to swallow it when the guy has been productive for you versus a guy who just produced elsewhere. Truthfully, if they're going to add a third baseman, if that's what the Mets are going to do, like if you're right that Pete's gone anyway and they want to add a third baseman and they want to move Vientos to first base, I prefer Alex Bregman anyway. In fact, we'll do that on a future Rico. Alex Bregman versus Willy Adames. You want to talk about a guy that impacts winning? I think Alex Bregman impacts winning. And one other thing about Bregman, he's not moving to a new position. He is a third baseman versus Willy Adames. Coming up on the next Rico, I'm looking forward to this. We are going to go through every single starting pitcher that's a free agent. We've got different tier levels to each guy. We'll talk about what they did last year, how old they are, what kind of contract they're looking for, and if they're a good fit for the New York Mets. We'll go through every single name, and Hoff and I will give a yay, nay, or eh, I don't know, maybe if we're desperate. That's coming up on the next edition of Rico Bronya. Keep the emails coming. We will try to mix in mailbags throughout this offseason. All you got to do is email us at thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. A lot of future Ricos coming up. I mentioned the starting pitcher deep dive. We'll do a relief pitcher deep dive. We'll do a position player deep dive. Obviously, we'll pop up with Ricos as news breaks throughout this offseason. And coming up early next week, right before MLB hands out their awards, who's the MVP, the Cy Young, the Rookie of the Year, we're going to have our very own award show as we'll hand out the 2024 Rico Bronya Mets Awards. That'll be posted, and you'll get to listen and view that Sunday night here on Rico Bronya, wherever you download or subscribe to your podcast, whether it's watching live on YouTube or it's downloading it on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.